The PT Pintcast is sponsored by the Next Gen Institute of Physical Therapy, offering state-of-the-art certifications, orthopedic residency, and postdoctoral fellowship learning experiences, allowing participation from virtually anywhere in the U.S. We believe in moving the profession forward through novel, post-professional educational opportunities. We are the Next Gen of Physical Therapists. Enter promo code PTPintcast at checkout for 15% off of any product.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Today on the PT Pintcast, we welcome Real Talk PT, Andrew Rothschild. On the Twitter sphere, at a Rothschild PT, a doctor of physical therapy, residency and fellowship trained manual PT, describes himself on Twitter as a learner, mentor, teacher, student, husband, father. Did I miss anything?
No, I say that's absolutely correct. That's realpttalk.com.
Yeah, you're in Richmond, Virginia. You just moved back to Richmond?
Yes, I was there. I was lived here for 10 years. I was in Memphis for 2 years and just moved back a week ago.
Well, thanks for jumping on the Pintcast. I saw you kind of all over Twitter. I really just started using Twitter since I got to PT school a year ago. So that's how we kind of connected. You tweeted me about it a half hour ago just to let me know what we're going to be drinking. And you went with what?
I went with a Full Nelson Virginia Pale Ale from the Blue Mountain Brewery.
Well, not to be a one-upper. I was just walking through the grocery store yesterday and I saw three things combined that I figured this will be horrible or this will be great. It is from the Dewclaw Brewery in Maryland. It's called Sweet Baby Jesus. Have you heard of this?
I have. I had it.
Chocolate peanut butter porter.
Yeah, it's sweet.
That's what I'm drinking. We kind of connected on Twitter about something that's near and dear to your heart and to mine. Mine because I'm a PT student right now. Yours because, you know, you were a PT student, but now you're also, you're a teacher, you're adjunct faculty.
Yeah, I was at VCU, did some guest lectures there, took a lot of students, was a sort of a clinical mentor, essentially.
How's that going back to where you went to PT school and actually teaching? That's got to be cool.
It was very cool. One of the ortho professors, she asked me if I wanted to just come in and do a lecture, one of the ones that she had prepared years ago. And so I started doing that, and then gradually just kind of made it my own. I did it sort of 4 or 5 years in a row.
So I got to backtrack. The reason we kind of connected on Twitter was you had talked about the rising cost of PT school. Why the hell is it getting so big? So yeah. Why the hell is it so expensive? I'm going to pay over $100K.
No, yeah. And I don't know. And, it, you know, sort of I had gotten in some other Twitter conversations with Dr. Ben Fung, who you probably follow on Twitter as well. Yep. He's a real sharp guy. Just got his MBA. And he had posted a little thing about the cost of he had some alternatives to PT education, some different just out of the box type thinking. And I had written I was in the course of writing a post about residency fellowship, and I've been a strong advocate on Twitter about the need, I think, for residency fellowship in especially in the outpatient orthopedic setting. And that kind of went right into the whole thing that because PT school is so expensive, that's one thing that sometimes prevents, you know, new grad PTs from going into residency and fellowship programs either right after school or within the first couple of years, just because they're looking at the price tag, which, you know, is not that much relative to your debt, but is still a significant amount when you're already coming out with $50,000 up to $150,000, which is just tuition. That's not even the cost of your living.
Right. I was doing the math. So tuition right off the bat where I go to school is $100K. Rent, because I'm in the DC metro area, $1,200 to $1,500 a month plus costs. And then all of a sudden, it took my dad to point out, oh yeah, by the way, you're not working for 3 years. Right. So even if you were making 50 grand, a college graduate could pull off 50 grand somewhere, that's another $150,000 you didn't make. By all means, I want to be more educated. I wouldn't mind doing a residency or a fellowship, but you're right. That's the first thing that comes across my mind is I want to put something in the bank.
So that's the upsetting thing is that, you know, obviously private schools are going to cost a lot more. VCU, where I went, public school, when I graduated in 2006, we're looking at probably 30, 35 just tuition, and now it's up to 50, which is very, very reasonable. But again, that's just tuition. That's not rent and food and other stuff. But the average PT salary when you're coming out is probably not changed that much. It does go up every year, but it doesn't go up at the rate that offsets the cost of the education.
Right.
And as PTs, our ceiling, you know, for salaries is a certain amount. I mean, you know, MDs, the argument is that MD, you know, med school is very expensive as well. However, you know, let's not kid ourselves, MDs, depending on what aspect of the profession you go into, has a much higher salary ceiling. I mean, you want to be an orthopedic surgeon, yeah, you got to put in a 5 or 6 year residency and possibly fellowship, but they're making between $500,000 and $750,000 a year. That's a lot different than a very good PT salary, which is probably between 70 and 90. Right. And then that's also comes with depending on what kind of setting you're working in.
Right. So you're kind of asking yourself, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is one more year, is that worth it?
And I think the answer is yes. And I think it also depends. You know, and my argument all along has also been that PT school doesn't adequately prepare you for treating patients very well, which you unfortunately will not find out until you get out there. And you realize, because PT school is basically preparing you for the boards. You know, you're covering all different aspects of PT. You're covering wound care, acute care, rehab, all different kinds of things. It's a lot of information to fit in 3 years. However, as we've discussed, I know you've done some of your own research in the background, you're finding out that there's a lot of extraneous stuff in there that is not either has been outdated or the research is now starting to prove that has not been proven well to be taught. Or they're teaching stuff that because it just has been taught, they've been teaching it. Or it's because it's stuff that's still out there, they're still teaching it. There's other, you know, don't get me wrong, there's definitely some progressive programs out there that are doing a little bit more than others. However, the fact of the matter is that, you know, I've been taking patients and I've been working for 9 years. I've been taking students for 8 years. So I've seen students from all over Virginia, Buffalo, Tennessee. So I'm kind of getting an idea of what level that they're at. And as a whole, even as a third year PT student, you're still really far behind in terms of being really able to give patients a good quality treatment and to give them the good value treatment, because they're coming in spending a lot of money as well. With the healthcare system changing, they're dropping, maybe their deductible is $3,000. They're dropping $100, $150 for a treatment session.
Right.
They're going to want value out of that treatment session.
Right away. And we're in America, so I'm instant gratification.
Right. A new grad PT is still, they are still, don't get me wrong, they're still ready to treat patients. They're just not necessarily as ready as they could be. And I think the residency, or even just a residency, the amount that you learn in just that 1 year, because think about it, you know, you have ortho classes, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe combined, you multiply that by 10, and that's what you're getting in a year of a residency.
For residency. Okay.
You're really getting immersed in it, and that just makes that exponentially increased.
So let's go back. So the question is, with the rising cost of PT school, and we talked about some of the excess, some of the fat that could be cut out of a PT program, and you had on your website, your blog, realpttalk.com, you kind of threw the question out there. Well, how do we do it? Eliminate modalities is probably that's the go-to answer. That's the first thing that's going to come up. But I jumped on Facebook and I went to the DPT student Facebook group, which has something like 17,000 students in it, and I posed that very question. And this way, I'm getting it right from the students' mouths. What classes could you lose and still be a good PT? And I got some good responses. It started to get a little bit of a flame war. Some people were talking some smack, and that's the sign of a good conversation, is people get fired up. So you mind if I go through some of these and I'll get your thoughts on them?
Yeah, absolutely.
I got three good ones. I kind of looked for the classes that tended to pop up pretty often. So CJ Joseph from FIU threw out this out quickly, and it got a lot of likes. It was wound care. He said, should 100% be an elective or post-grad certification? He says he understands some of our profession uses wound care frequently, but he thinks in a lot of settings it's just a waste of time. Do you think that's something we could lose or incorporate into a couple-week module somewhere else?
Yeah, I liked that one. I mean, to be honest, go back to the origins of physical therapy, how it came to be. In reality, wound care shouldn't even be within our scope of practice. That's for a different conversation, but that's really gets more into a medical side of things. You know, it somehow got morphed into physical therapy and it's got stuck.
Yeah.
But reality, have I ever treated wound care in 9 years? No. It could be some sort of elective type thing for those, because there are people who are very much interested in that.
Right. You had mentioned some schools kind of changing the curriculum, kind of being forward thinking. And I guess some schools out there still have it as a class, most likely because it was always a class. So we just keep it as a class.
Well, I think, you know, PT school, they thrive on, or their, a lot of their curriculum and their is based on what percentage of their students pass the board exams first time.
Okay.
So they are teaching towards the board exams, for better or for worse.
Which one is it? Is it better or worse?
Yeah, well, I think it's worse, because as the board exam goes, PT school will go. Exams like that take years to modify. You know, I remember even just the OCS exam, they told us don't do research that's newer than like 3 or 4 years old, because you could have had a piece of research last week that contradicted research from 4 years ago, but the question is going to relate to what it was 4 years ago, because that's how long it takes
for
this process to go through.
Okay.
And so I think it's from the PT schools to change, it's going to require the exam, the nature of the exam to change as well. But that's why certain things are taught, like wound care.
Okay. So you brought up another thing that popped up and got a bunch of attention. Sarah Worley from Greenville, South Carolina, just mentioned this. She said they had way too many research courses. She had 4 research courses. I had 3.
The question is, with research, is it about doing research or reading research? And I think knowing how to read research is important, because there's a lot of research out there, and the knock on physical therapy research is that a lot of the research is not good. The problem is a lot of it is still published in these peer-reviewed journals, and so we have to be able to read it and discern whether it's actually a good article. So you have to learn how to figure out how to determine what is a good research article, even though a abstract may show some findings. When you delve deeper into the details, you find out, hey, this really article wasn't very good. The number to treat was very low. The p-value was very low. The different kinds of things. So knowing some of the statistics from a reading research standpoint, I think, is important. Doing research is a whole different thing, and that could be something that's extracurricular type.
Being a critical consumer of research is important.
Right. And some of it depends, because certain schools have a different focus. You know, certain schools have a bigger manual therapy program than others.
All right, the last one, and this one comes from Colin Colgrove, goes to the University of Michigan at Flint, and he brings up a class that I don't think is in my program, so I guess that's a good sign for where I go to school. But a lot of different PT program students chimed in and said they had a similar class. They called it teaching and learning.
Huh.
So I guess it's a way to instruct patients to perform exercises, is what I'm getting from just the blog post. Did you have something like this at VCU?
No, we didn't. It definitely wasn't called that. I mean, there's, you know, we have a class that still deals with that kind of dealt with like patient interaction, sort of an examination, evaluation process. And that stuff is important, because patient interaction and how you present things and how you talk to patients and how patients learn and different things is very important. But it's not necessarily stuff that can be easily learned in a class. You kind of get on the job. And then certain people have that skill innately, and certain people don't. And certain people have to work hard at it. Certain people are just natural at it. You know, so it's just relating to people. It's relating to patients. It's being able to pick out something in one patient that you can connect with, and how to relate this to this patient, and then doing the exact same thing in a totally different patient in a different way. It's not something that I would think we need an entire class for. I think it's something that can be incorporated into some other classes.
Changing a curriculum can't be quick and easy. Is that why things take so long to get lost?
Absolutely. I mean, it takes a lot, especially an entire curriculum, take a lot of changes, because it would involve schedules, it involves research the professors are involved in, it involves obviously how to make sure that they have the students prepared for the board exams and then for all the information that they would need. I think part of it comes from, you know, at least I did, was that they sent out a survey asking about the preparation of the program for the real world, essentially. And I think that feedback will start to make a difference. And there's enough feedback where students are saying, no, we're not prepared. We're kind of floundering out here. We're not doing well. We don't feel like we spent a lot of time doing stuff that we are not at all even come close to using. That may be what starts to change some of the thing. Money is the big thing. And if you, and like you said before, if the people are agreeing that the juice is not worth the squeeze, we're going to see those qualified applicants start to dwindle. And that's going to make a big difference in the profession, because you're going to have people coming out or who got into PT school because of the fact that other people who are more qualified decide to go somewhere else, maybe med school, maybe DO school, and maybe, God forbid, chiropractor school, you know, because they're looking at the end. They're looking at the end result, too, is that I want to be happy with what I do and make and be able to provide a comfortable living for myself and my family and not have to live in $150,000 worth of debt, making maybe a quarter of that coming out. What am I going to do?
That's a good point.
I think that's that kind of stuff starts to make a difference. I mean, we're seeing just in Virginia alone, there's like four new PT schools, which means the applicant pool is saturated. There's a lot more people getting into PT school. And the fact is it changes the quality of the student coming of the PT coming out.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to make sure I fill up on another beer. And when we come back, I want to talk about how you got into PT with a bachelor's degree in geography. And you had to put it on your website that, yes, that is a valid degree. I want to know about that. And I want to get into the conversation. And the last couple of episodes that we've recorded, I find myself tripping over this way to name. Are they patients or are they customers? And I feel like one of those is like a dirty word, but should it be? We'll get back into it in 60 seconds. So hang on.
Physical therapy and beer go together.
Right.
The PT Podcast with McKay.
Coming October 1st, Next Gen PT TV, an affordable subscription-based video platform designed by PTs for PTs. Access and watch clinically relevant content for as low as $7.95 a month. With channels ranging from orthopedic prep to applied pain sciences, you'll be sure to find a channel for you. Next Gen PT TV. More information at nxtgenpt.tv. On Twitter at nxtgen Institute. Next Gen PT TV, coming October 1st.
This is the PT Pinecast.
All right, we're back from the reloading the beer break. We're with Andrew Rothschild on the Twitter sphere at @arothschildpt. He's got a blog. He's talking real PT, realpttalk.com. Where did you do your bachelor's degree in geography, and what does one do with a bachelor's degree in geography? I didn't know it was a real degree.
It is a real degree. I went to Mary Washington College,
okay,
as it was called at the time. It's now the University of Mary Washington. I started off actually as an English major and quickly changed. Although now that I'm writing, actually may have been very applicable. But I got into geography. It was I just took an intro class, and the professor was just so captivating and energetic. Automatically, almost switched majors, and every professor in the department was just kind of just made you kind of love the topic, and I liked it in the fact that, you know, geography we think about just as places and look things and capitals and rivers and mountains and lakes and whatnot. But it was more so, it was really all encompassing in terms of you're looking at political geography. How is the geography of, let's say, we were looking at the Baltics at the time because it was in the, I was in there the late 90s. So former like Yugoslavia, Bosnia, and these kinds of countries. And why were they like it the way they are? So the political geography, the cultural geography, one country's landlocked, one country's not landlocked, and how this impacts different things, the different religions in each country. So it was really kind of, it covered a lot of different topics at the same time. And so the next part of the question is, what do you do with it?
Right.
And that was the problem.
Nah.
Because the real jobs in geography are cartography, air photo analysis, all the stuff that I didn't like. I like the other part of it. I went on one interview with an offshoot of the CIA, which does sort of air photo analysis, and it was a complete disaster. And it was a horrible interview. And I was like, maybe this is not for me.
Yeah.
I ended up working for WorldCom, which is now, I think, Verizon. I had no idea what I was doing. And then within the first year or so, I ended up having back surgery. I had a lumbar fusion at L4-5 for spondylolisthesis. I'd never had PT before, and that was sort of my first initial exposure to physical therapy, and that got me thinking about, hey, this might be something that I could do, and that was sort of got the wheels turning and the ball rolling, so to speak.
Now, you're married. Does your wife give you shit if you ever get lost? She can kind of just point at you and be like, how are you screwing this up?
Well, thankfully now there's Google Maps, so.
Yeah. All right, so we got the story of what a BA in geography is and how it got you to PT. Let's talk about something you have posted at Real PT Talk. PTPodcast.com, and you had written, as PTs, are we in the medical business or the service business? Do we treat patients or do we treat customers? You said you had thrown out this question on Twitter several weeks ago. What was the main response that you got? What was the main gist of what people in the PT field thought about those two words? And one of them kind of seems dirty.
Yeah, I think the overall vibe is really sort of going towards that customer route in a positive way, in the sense that, you know, we're the service industry versus the medical industry. It's kind of like, you know, if you go to your doctor and then you don't go back, do they care?
They gave you a disservice.
Right. People need physical therapy is one side of the argument. People need physical therapy. They should want to come. But the fact of the matter is, as sort of Jerry Durham sort of brought to my attention, you know, so eloquently, basically he's like, physical therapy is a commodity. You know, you don't need to have it. It is a very valuable healthcare service that it can be actually more valuable in some ways and much more of a cost saver than other medical interventions. People can choose to go to you or somewhere else down the street. And my argument was sort of that, you know, if we're all in the insurance-based industry, the cost is essentially the same because we don't dictate the cost. The insurance dictates the cost.
Right.
If your deductible is $2,000, it's $2,000 if you come see me. But then the value for what you get is the difference. And so when you have a patient that comes in, a patient sort of implies more of a passive connotation is the big difference. So a patient is someone who comes in, is more passively, they're almost relying on you to give them treatment, versus the customer implies more of an active role. And I think the goal is that we're trying to make customers out of our patients in that they become better consumers of healthcare. They're better educated. And just as if they would do the research to buy a car, they're going to do the research to choose a physical therapist.
I haven't heard it said like that before, and I kind of like it. You're trying to make customers out of your patients, because I've heard this before. Having knee surgery is done to you. Being given a script for pain meds is done to you. And physical therapy is not that. It is something you need to be an active participant in. So I think that's a good way to begin a relationship with a patient or a customer.
Yeah.
Is to make a patient a customer.
I think when they walk in, they're a patient. It depends on how, because if the patient's direct access, they're a customer.
Right.
If they're referred by the doctor, it's still sort of passive. They're like a patient. They're just going where the doctor told them to go.
Right.
And then when they come in, it's your job to make them a customer. You ideally don't want them to come back, but then you want them to come back if they ever need your services.
Right.
Again. And you want them to tell their friends and family and neighbors and priests and rabbis to come see you, you know, or both, whatever. And that's the whole point, is to make them a customer. And I'm a well-trained manual therapist. I like to do manual therapy, which can be looked at as a passive treatment to the patient. However, at the same time, it's a means to an end. It's the goal is to get them active and empowering the patient to do things. And sometimes they need a little bit of assistance to get some pain calmed down, get a joint moving a little bit better. And then you empower them to show that they can do a couple of these things on their own, and that makes a big difference, rather than just they're coming in relying on you to do everything.
Are we as a field headed in that direction of approaching it like this? I mean, Jerry Durham did a lot of talking about the customer experience, and he said it just like that. He changed that word a couple of times, patient customer experience, and talking about how it's all got to be there to get them to buy in. And if they're doing their research and they're picking you because they've done their research and they've heard from their priest or their rabbi or their friends that you're the guy to go to feel better, that it's important to make sure that they are getting that buy-in. Are we heading in the right direction as a field?
I hope so. You know, I think so. And again, it still depends on what kind of setting you're working in. I think if you're working in private practice, the answer is yes. I think if you're working for a physician-owned PT practice, for example, I don't think the answer is yes.
Because you got a steady stream anyway, or?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my first job at a PT school was a physician-owned PT practice, and I left it just after a year. You know, the people I was surrounded with, unless they had no internal motivation, unless you have any internal motivation to be better, where was the motivation, even just from a, let's just say from a business standpoint? Because it was a steady supply of patients. There's no marketing involved. Doctors are not good at those doctors there were not good at differentiating good PT from bad PT. They don't necessarily even. It's sad to say, a lot of them don't necessarily even care. Some do, but I think a large majority don't necessarily do, especially when there's a financial incentive for them to refer in-house. So the quality of PT was not very good. So you're not seeing them. The customer service aspect is lacking in that kind of setting. And I think when you're in private practice, every patient is an opportunity for, you know, to look at it as every patient is an opportunity from a marketing business standpoint, not just to look at it in that sense, but like, I want this patient to have a great experience. So they tell their doctor, they come back if they need to, and they tell everyone they know to come see me. I think that's a big difference.
I think that is a big difference. So realtalkpt.com, where did it come from? What inspired you to jump on there and start putting some thoughts out there? Because it's a bold move, because when you start putting thoughts out there, especially about an industry as big/small as PT, people are going to give their 2 cents whether you want them to or not. So putting yourself out there, that's bold. What kind of inspired you to do it?
I felt like I had a lot to say, and it was just I wanted a forum to say it. You know, it's, you know, talk with people you have. You know, there's a lot of great things. That's kind of like you. I have only been on Twitter probably for about a year or so, and there's a great PT community on Twitter. It's tough to sometimes convey things in just 140 characters. And I felt like, you know what, there's stuff I want to say. I think there's a need for it. I mean, there's some other great PT blogs out there. But I thought that the information that we have, we kind of know it, but we need to get it out there to the public to know. So my initial thought was, I want to get a lot of content out there, a lot of discussion out there, foster some discussion and debate about some certain topics, all in an effort to kind of push PT into the direction I think it needs to go. And so a lot of the positions I take on my site, I take one side on purpose, just for the purpose of fostering debate. I don't necessarily believe everything I write 100%, and I always see both sides, but I just take one side to say, here's one thought, let's discuss everything else out there and see what's out there.
If you don't at least get the people within field excited, how's the patient/customer ever going to get excited about it?
Absolutely. And I think if you go into physical therapy in general, it's obviously something that you're not going in for the money. You know, you're going into it.
Wait. There's not a ton of money to be made. I was waiting for a giant check for my first job.
I'm sure there is. You just have to go about it in a more creative way. You know, it's not, if you want to be, if you want to do a job for money, go to law school. If you want to go to do a job for money, PT school is not the way to go. But if you want a job that's exciting and you're helping people and it's dynamic and you're constantly learning things and things are changing, it's a great field to be in. So I think everyone who's in it is in it for the right reasons. But there's some people who are kind of just, you know, stuck in the mud a little bit. And there's some people who are just trying to pull everybody forward. And I want to be on the side that's kind of pulling everybody or pushing everybody forward. And I think the more people we have that do that, that's going to drive hopefully some true change.
What do DPT students listening right now, what's the one thing we're missing, or what's the one thing we need to be paying attention to make sure 10 years from now are progressing the field?
I think the important thing is that people come out of PT school, and I think the thought is, I'm done. I got my DPT. I'm a doctor of physical therapy. I'm good. All I got to do is just treat patients. And I think the important message is, unfortunately, the sad reality is you just begun. You know, there's so much more to learn. You've just sort of just barely scratched the surface. When I look at students, or I look at someone who's applying for a job, I want to know that people know what they don't know. And that is, no matter how well trained you are, there's everybody who I've talked to, people who are my mentors, still think they're not very good. They don't know that much, even though they're PhDs and fellows and all this kind of stuff, that they're constantly striving to get better. So the important thing is, you know, getting out there, learning as much as you can, trying to, you know, take continuing education courses, go into residency and fellowship programs, because that's when you're really going to find how much more you can learn. Look for mentors. I mean, that's a great, especially now with in the age of the internet, where you can access people so easily on Twitter and on Facebook. You can get in touch with people who are so willing to help. I mean, there's so much stuff that's shared on Twitter, like research that people are doing. People are sharing so much stuff for free because it's helping the profession out. They're not keeping it private anymore, just valuable information for them. But you can get access to these people who are more than willing to give their time to help from a mentorship standpoint, answer questions, talk to people. So there's a lot of resources that are out there. And even if you're a single PT in a clinic by yourself, you still have resources that are out there. So I think the learning never stops, and just kind of keep looking for those kinds of things.
So I don't think this is the last time we're going to talk. I had a hell of a time. The sweet baby Jesus, the chocolate P
peanut butter porter. You made a good call. It was very, very sweet. Great to have one of them. I don't know if I could have three or four, though. How was the full Nelson Virginia Pale Ale?
Oh, it's very good. I've just kind of recently gotten into more pale ales, and I'm definitely enjoying it.
You find him on Twitter at @arothschildpt, realpttalk.com. He's been nice enough to drink a beer with us for the PT Pinecast. Realpttalk.com, that's what you can expect. Andrew Rothschild, it's been a pleasure talking to you and having a beer with you, and I do not think it'll be long before we talk again, my man.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
The PT Pinecast with McKay. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.